I want to introduce you to someone who helps other people. In fact, last week, or a couple of weeks back, after he heard me share the story about the 13-year-old Aboriginal girl with intellectual disabilities who was bullied, assaulted, she says, by her classmates, and ever since she only faced interrogation, harassment, and bullying by the school itself, she and her family, it has been a hell for them to go through what they've had to go through, they say, at Holy Trinity. This gentleman reached out. He's from Spectrum Insights, and what he does is he talks about and he teaches how social acceptance in schools can actually beat bullying in a sense. So joining us now, it is Mr. John Anderson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Dahlia. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining. You know, even before we get into the conversation about, you know, social acceptance and inclusion and those sorts of things, when I'm reading comments coming in from people, for instance, like a man who says, well, what do you mean? Nobody bullies, nobody would be racist towards a little girl, or a woman who says, well, at that school, everything has been fine for me. It seems as though to even begin a conversation with them, you have to be able to open their minds that there is a problem. So how do you even start a conversation when people don't realize that or don't accept that this is a problem?
I think a lot of the students with disabilities, when you're working, well, I see them on a daily basis. A lot of people don't quite understand what the challenges that they face, the sensory needs, the social difficulties in the school space. And children sometimes may be really mean to other kids. And so it's one of those things that kind of, I think, brush underneath the carpet. And if you're a professional who understands autism or intellectual disabilities, it's easy to see. But the ones who don't, expect the kids to step up and act like a neurotypical teenager or a kid, and they don't realize like the challenges they face. I mean, just sensory needs in a large and school with the lights, sounds, and a lot of other kids around, and social difficulties. It really makes it hard for these kids to cope on a day-to-day basis. And I don't think teachers, not all of them, quite understand that.
Well, somebody sent me a message, a public message, saying that her EA, her daughter's EA, would actually hit her. And she has intellectual disabilities. It's like the person thought that she could hit whatever type of sense she was trying to get into her. And it seems as though even sometimes people who are supposed to be equipped for this, I guess you can say, technically, because she has whatever degree or certifications to be able to be an EA, it doesn't seem as though they're necessarily equipped with the empathy.
Yeah, we had I had a meeting with an organization in Ottawa recently, and we're talking about professionals who just lack understanding. Not to throw anyone underneath the bus, but there is an institution in Ottawa where I have a little project going with adults who have core morbidity, and the other issue is autism, and they don't have an autism program there to fully understand that they're adults. So they work with mental health challenges, but there is a lack of understanding for autism. I think there is quite a few professionals out there who just they lack the information that they need to help these kids. And that's something that in Ottawa we're trying to do, is to raise more awareness, get more education, and to help the people working with the kids, not only to have more patience with them and understanding. I mean, I've heard stories like that too, and I've worked in places where the teachers are not very patient with special needs kids. And some of these places actually are spaces for special needs kids.
That is frightening to me. And, you know, I can understand in one regard, especially during the pandemic, a lot of people are feeling more stress. They're feeling more anxiety, which also means our children are feeling that as well. Mm-hmm. And I feel as though that this can actually be making things worse for kids in schools, especially when we're looking at the conditions that the teach. And it's not an excuse. It's not an excuse to treat the children poorly. But I feel as though things might be getting worse, especially given the feedback I've been receiving. What are you seeing?
Oh, my kids are definitely feeling excluded. So I'm just going to read to you just quickly. My parent wrote this. So loneliness and a lack of connection is a problem for a lot of teens, and even worse for teens on the spectrum who struggle with social skills and finding people with similar interests. So my son doesn't really have any friends the way most people think of them. The Spectrum Insights group has given him a sense of belonging and a place to hang out, which he's never really had before. And that just says, like this parent is saying, his kid has social struggles in school. There's no real space for him to be himself. Add COVID-19 on top of that. A lot of these kids are lonely. They're stressed out. When they come to our socials, we have to do social distancing. We don't have the same activities we can normally run. They are happy to sit for 3 hours and talk to each other. I mean, that's how lonely they are. That's how much time. I mean, some of them haven't seen each other since March. So just creating a safe space for them is really important. And then going to school and adding the stress of possibly being bullied, not really having any friends to speak of, and lack of understanding. Like, just imagine you're a teenager and nobody really understands how you operate in the world. It's really tough.
Well, that's a regular teenager to begin with, I guess. Add all of these other layers on when you can be talking about being on the spectrum or having whatever type of learning disability, that's compounds things so much more. If you're just joining, I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods. We're having a conversation with John Anderson from Spectrum Insights. He creates a safe and inclusive space for ASD and ADHD youth with mild learning disabilities, all the way from age 12 to adult. There's also a dedicated girls program because, yes, I've had these sorts of programs, and it is, when you talk about girls, there are added layers that need to be focused on in certain cases. But I'm wondering right now, when we have, like we've talked about, COVID and anxieties and stresses of adults and the anxiety and stresses of kids, how are we creating safe spaces during isolation? Because then there's also heightened chances for cyberbullying and those sorts of things. And how are we creating safe spaces just in a society that seems to lack empathy and patience for people who don't operate on the same speed or wavelength as others?
Well, the thing is, I don't think we really are creating safe spaces. I think it's the question is, how do we create more spaces? I'll give you an example. We take the kids out on outings during our summer program. The idea is to expose them to the world, but also expose the world to them so they can see how our kids operate. So there's a restaurant, I'm going to give a shout out to Level One. They are amazing. It's a gaming lounge, and they're really inclusive to our kids. Not all restaurants are like that. Thankfully, quite a few are very patient with our kids. But we're taking them out into a safe space in the world, going to a restaurant where they can learn how to do tax and tip, order from a complicated menu.
I can't even order from a complicated menu.
Well, there you go. And this space, the staff, they're amazing. Like, they'll really take care of the kids and give them, you know, the time they need to order, be patient with them while we're helping them or coaching them. So more places that are just a little more patient and understanding for these kids would be great. Not only that, having their own space to hang out in is really important. Hanging out with neurotypical teens is a challenge because they're trying to navigate all the social rules that you and I just take for granted. A greeting we can do very easily, but a lot of these kids just like, well, why do we wave hello? Why do we, like, a flash of an eyebrow to show that you're interested in somebody and what they're saying? Having a safe space where they can hang out with their peers and then have a bit of coaching from us and just be themselves is really important. It takes the stress off them. And they're comfortable to be themselves. So we need a little more of that in Ottawa, social safe spaces.
The other side of it that I wonder is how we could improve the spaces that are created in their own homes with their parents. And when I say spaces, I mean the headspace is afforded to them by their parents. For instance, when I see two adults respond to that story I share about the 13-year-old girl with intellectual disabilities who's also Aboriginal, and they say, oh, well, one of them says, yes, but how can anybody be racist towards a little girl? No one's racist to a little girl. Or the other person says, my kids have gone to Holy Trinity for years and I've had no problems. I've had no issues. So both of these parents are clearly creating environments within their homes where they give the sense as though everything is perfect and everybody's the same. And I can't imagine that those parents are teaching their children about the differences there are in this world and how we have to be not just tolerant. I hate that word because I don't want somebody to be tolerant of me, but we have to be accepting and we have to be open to different types of people and experiences. So how do we get into those parents' minds who are breeding and nurturing these children into thinking that nobody has a problem, nobody's marginalized, everybody's fine, and it's their problem if they think they see one?
Yeah, I think it comes down to really education. One thing, even educators might not understand the sensory challenges a child has with special needs. And so they're expecting the kid to, like I mentioned before, to step up and behave maybe like a neurotypical, not realizing that maybe they cannot hear the instruction very well. Maybe they're not able to do a task because it's just physically challenging. There might be some stressors because of the environment that they're in. And so if parents understood what's going through the mind of one of these kids and the struggle that they're facing, that we're not, it's like walking a mile in somebody else's shoes. And I walked many miles with these kids, and I know how they're feeling, what they're thinking. And it's education to show other people, you know, the challenges they face. Then you'd be more understanding, and then it'd be easier to have a conversation about, oh, that's why they're picked on, or this does happen. People, and also, too, they don't want to face these challenges. I think people just want to brush it underneath the carpet.
What are kids saying to you right now, their biggest concerns when they confess to you or when you can just observe what's happening?
Just having friends. They really just want to be. They want to make social connections. They really just want to have friends. I mean, that's just part of being a teenager. And these guys, that's their big struggle. When they come to me for, we teach life skills. 90% of the kids and parents really just want their child to have a friend, have somebody phone them, come over and hang out on the weekend. And they're just so happy to come to the social group that we run. And even better when they make friends outside of the group and they're able to call each other. The parents are happy. That's all they want. That's the number one thing, is just to be included, have somebody that cares about them and have a friend to talk to.
Why did you start this? Why did you get into this? Of all things you could possibly do in the world, John, why did you decide that you want to create safe and inclusive spaces for kids with their learning disabilities?
Well, I mean, I saw the struggles they had socially, and I was initially coaching, doing autism coaching one-on-one, but I realized, like, the one-on-one, well, they really need the practice. They have to go out and meet other people. So then, well, let's create a space where there's three or four kids, and that's how Spectrum Insight started with, I think, a small group of five kids. We go out in the world, and now, aside from COVID-19, like, our summer group, we had, I think, up to 30 kids. Our social groups can be as high as 30. Usually they have around 10 to 20. You know, that's a lot of students. We started it with just a few, and the idea was to get them interacting with each other, practice their social skills. We also ran a program at a church where they had the youth group. They were just neurotypical teens come and interact with our kids, and it was a really neat experience. They got to learn about our students on the spectrum, and our kids got to hang out with some neurotypical teens and sort of pick up some of their habits and have them as role models. So I just saw that the kids are lonely and needed help with their social skills, and there's no other better way to do it than go out and practice in the real world and build up their confidence so they can have meaningful interactions with people, because it can be really stressful for them, and the social anxiety is huge.
If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to seek your help, how can they find you?
SpectrumInsights.ca is a great way. We're also on Facebook. If you just look up Spectrum Insights, and you can see our programs and learn about our social skills.
John Anderson from Spectrum Insights, thanks for taking your time to join us and for taking your time to help a portion of society that isn't always recognized, especially according to these tweets I'm getting. People don't realize how serious this is. Thank you.
Well, thanks for giving me a voice and a voice to these kids. I appreciate it. And I know many families do. So thank you so much.
We need to do that. John Anderson from Spectrum Insights. Still ahead, we put this question up on Facebook. Loblaws has raised hero pay. Yes, for its shareholders. Oh, but it's ended pandemic pay, remember, for its frontline workers months ago. Should Loblaws reinstate hero pay for employees? You tell me your thoughts. Tweet me at Delia Kritz. Join the conversation on 580 CFRA's Facebook page. It is 8:23. It is -1. Chance of freezing rain, but once we hit that zero mark, which should happen anytime, and up to 8, that won't be as much of a chance now, will it? This is The Goods on 580 CFRA.